They're still flashing at Mardi Gras, they've told me. I don't think it's like it was in the heyday, though. Women are too scared. As they should be.
Because of the camera phones.
Yeah.
I haven't gone to Mardi Gras. I feel like I need to one year. Wade Smith,
yeah,
what do you think
really live in the place.
What do I think about the fact that you've never gone to Mardi Gras?
Should I go?
I think that's par for the course for you, but you should definitely try to experience that at least once in your life. You know what I mean?
I've been to a bunch of resorts. I've been very fortunate when it comes to travel and seeing different places, but I have not done any like crazy party scene like Cabo or any of those kind of spring break
Is Cabo a crazy party scene?
I don't know if Cabo is. So what am I thinking? I just think Cancun?
That's like spring family trips there. So
yeah, but during spring break.
If you
probably,
go in spring break,
right?
It's
yeah,
good.
But is it still like a place that people go?
It was pretty calm when I went.
Back in the day, like during the MTV heyday, I could see that. But like now, I don't even know if
kids don't go on spring break anymore. They game.
We went for
they stay home and play Fortnite.
We went for a bachelor party there in September, and there were pretty much no women to be found.
Wait,
and,
where?
To Cabo.
Oh, really?
Cabo,
no,
yeah.
In September. Their bachelor party?
Yeah, pretty much. Like I think we found like three or four women who came back to the house, and it was like 20 guys.
Oh, man.
It's kind of awkward.
I feel bad for those women.
Yeah, that's a rough spot.
They might walk in, they're just like,
hey,
oh,
they didn't leave.
This is like, wait. Was the Texans' loss to the Giants a couple weeks ago the worst loss in the NFL all season long?
Yeah, man. I mean, just quickly thinking about it, I'm trying to think of any really
Bills
bad loss.
The Bills
beating the Titans, that's a pretty bad loss, but they were on
Vikings
the road,
too.
Right?
They beat the Vikings in Minnesota.
That, to me, is the worst loss. I think the Minnesota Texans,
what's their record right now? Like 2-3?
I think it might be 2-3. But
it was an embarrassing loss.
They were
at home.
Favored by like 17 points, and the Bills went there and they crushed them. At least
but
the Texans.
That was the week that Griffin like kind of freaked out a bit. We're not the same.
Oh, yeah.
They had some weird stuff going on in the locker room around that time.
He'd
so.
Already been out, though, too. I mean, it's one guy. There's no excuse to lose to the Bills, including if the Texans lose to the Bills.
They better not lose to the Bills. That's just something that's not acceptable.
I feel like that's the main take going into Sundays. Like, just don't lose, and you know, if you win, whatever.
I mean, they have an opportunity to get healthy as far as, like, gaining confidence. I think, like, up front with the offensive line, they did pretty well against the Cowboys front as far as in pass protection against some good pass rushers. And the Bills have a pretty good front four that can rush the passer. And so they're going to have to kind of build on what they did last week and continue that. Like Kendall Lamb, I thought he played pretty well against Lawrence, which is that's
notable.
And it definitely is. And he was doing a lot of times on his own. He wasn't getting a bunch of help.
Yeah.
And so if he can, you know, replicate that against – I'm not sure Jerry who's used if he switched to sides or not, but he's a damn good pass rusher himself. So that part of it, it'll lend them to being a better success for the rest of the season. So there is some things with this particular game, even though, like, honestly, the Bills are outmatched. When you look at the complete overall feel of the team, there's things that the line can improve on and consistently, you know, get better at so that they can kind of use that as trajectory going forward in the season.
Jerry Hughes' mom, mother-in-law, very, very good friend of the show.
Yes.
She'll probably see you at the pregame.
She probably will.
She told
I'm
us
sure
about
she'll be
when,
there.
When her daughter married Jerry Hughes, I think they had the reception in the Houstonian, and Mario Williams showed up with a wedding gift, which was like a pimped out like gator. Like not a golf cart, but the bigger version of the...
Really?
Yeah. It was either a Gator or a Kawasaki or one of those ones. One of those really cool, fun, like go-kart type deals. Yeah.
This is a world I need to inhabit at some point.
Yeah, it wasn't a Gator. It was one of those, like, the Rangers or whatever with the roll bar and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty good wedding gift.
Interesting. So the offensive line, how much better do you think it's gotten?
I mean, like, they're getting better little by little. I think schematically there's some things that they do that I just don't think make sense at all. And they're
like
kind of setting their guys up for failure. Like, a lot of times if you watch every negative run that Alfred Blue got last week, it was because they're having the center try to reach a 2-eye or a wide shade on an outside zone play. And, you know, it's kind of tough to describe that just over the radio, but they're basically putting him in a situation where he has no help, and it's already just reaching a person that is plus size or to the direction that the ball is going. He's already out leveraging you. That's already the most difficult block for a center to make, period, in football when you're running outside zone. But then that guy knows that that's what they're trying to do, so he widens his alignment even further, and they're not having the guard help him out. the guard is just kind of going and leaving him on the island. And so then he gets penetration and it's a tackle for loss and it's all bad. And so they have to, there's some things that they can do schematically, you know, technique wise that they can switch up to help that. And I haven't seen them do it. And the thing I have noticed about the O-line this year though, is that, you know, at the beginning of the season, they were doing really bad with TE games and ET games, just pass protection, working out games. And then they had mistakes and it cost them, but then they worked on it and they got better on it. And so I've seen them improve in handling, you know, working off games. So I expect the same thing in the run game, is giving Nick Martin some help when he has to block a wide shade.
What is it that has allowed for Kendall Lamb to do what he did this past Sunday? Because, you know, just the idea of Kendall Lamb blocking DeMarcus Lawrence going into the season is would have been laughable.
Well, if you go back and look at his preseason this year, the first, I think, three games, he played pretty well. I was really high on Kendall Lamb. I was coming here saying that, like, Kendall Lamb,
yep,
he might be the starter, because Shontrell Henderson hasn't shown me something that says he's definitely the guy. And so I was like, you know, but then that last preseason game, Kendall Lamb just kind of fell off the map. He just had a bad day at the office. And so once that happened, you know, he wasn't a starter, and then he disappears for a couple weeks because, you know, he's not a starter. And then he comes in there, he plays pretty decent the first game, and then this game, he played really well against Lawrence. And he has some natural pass protecting ability. He uses his hands well. He gets out of his stance. You know, he has a good quick setup in his stance, in his pass set. But his problem is when he gets beat, it looks really bad when he gets beat, and he kind of doesn't have that that sense of urgency. Like, he'll get beat and he'll just watch the guy go by, and it's like, man, Kendall, like, do something to try to save the play, because you're gonna get beat, but you can also save plays and just get the ball off just from extra effort.
That's where I worry about, and I wonder sometimes with guys on the offense like that you just described, and I've noticed that before. Unless a guy's a bum, and I don't think Kendall Lamb's a bum.
No.
It's evidence of overthinking, you know? And, like, whenever guys are moving slowly or not with necessarily the same violence or aggression that you'd expect, I always feel like, all right, why is their brain so wrapped up in what they're doing that they're not just playing football?
I feel like that there seems like there's some edict that says you need to stay on your feet to be a good offensive lineman. And in some respects, that's very true. Like, if you're playing the game on your feet, you're under control. Football is controlled chaos. If you're on your feet, then you can, you know, play with good sound fundamental techniques and play good ball. But there are certain times when you have to understand, hey, it's a sense of urgency. I got beat. I have to save the play. I have to save the day. And I don't really see that sense of urgency from guys. And I don't know if that's because they're always thinking, you know, play square to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Make sure that I, you know, this foot goes there. And sometimes you just got to play ball. And so I would like to see more of that. And I kind of saw that on the play. If you remember the play before Deshaun got blasted the last time, when he threw the interception, like right before the game was over,
at the end of regulation.
And that was like the one time that Kendall kind of got beat by Lawrence.
Yes.
And he got hit. Well, the play before that, they blitzed a cornerback off the edge that was really not Kendall Lamb's guy. And he saved it. He dove out there and just got enough a piece of him. And the ball got off and we had like a big completion. Those are the type of plays that are like when a lot of times when we were here, like John Britton would say that our offensive line are playmakers. That was making a play.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see more of that from those guys because they have it in them. I just feel like they don't understand it. Like, yeah, just go do it. You know what I mean? Let loose and just play ball. Like, hey, he's got an edge on you. Do something to save the day. Get the ball off, because we got really good skill position players. And so, like I said, I've seen some gradual improvement, and if they can keep doing that, then the line will be fine by the time it really matters.
We wanted to get your take on something Clowney said yesterday. This is Clowney talking about the game, the situation, the chance to win three games in a row.
Just keep winning, stacking wins, don't really care. Sacks, wins, you know, this is how I go in this league. The more sacks you get, the better player you are. That's all they say. So, just trying to get a win around here, like I said. Just trying to build on win home games. Got another tough opponent coming up this week in the running game with LeSean McCoy. Guy can make you miss.
The sacks part. The in-the-loop conspiracy. Is Clowney taking a shot at the organization or the media?
Are you asking me? What are you saying?
I'm asking.
That was their conspiracy.
Sort of facetiously.
Their theory was that he was directly taking a shot at both of them or
John suggested he was taking a shot at management in his attempts to get a better contract. So there was like part of a contract
with
ploy.
The sack total part specifically.
I think that subliminal could fit for both cases. I think it could be because people in the media are talking about how he's never had 10 sacks before. And, you know, because of that, he shouldn't be paid like a Khalil Mack should get paid. And I'm sure that in contract negotiations, those type of things come up as well. So, although when you look at Jadeveon Clowney, like a lot of times he doesn't make the play, but he blows up stuff so that somebody else can make the plays. And that's critical. That's key. And so from his perspective, he's like, maybe my numbers don't match up, but I affect the game in a way that pretty much no one else in the league does. And so he has that kind of leverage going for him. But he's picking up his sacks. And so if he gets the sacks along with that, then he should be a $120 million guy.
Yeah, and I totally, when I heard that, there wasn't a part of me that thought it was anything more than just the standard, well, this is a guy that just wrecks shop at time. And it's not reflected in the conventional stats that people look at, but he just does. There's to your point, Wade, about times he doesn't make the play. There was a tackle for the loss in that game versus the Cowboys where Clowney occupied three guys.
Yep.
Like he blew up a pulling guard. He blew up the tackle that was trying to get out to a linebacker. The tight end that was trying to block him was like clinging on for dear life. And it was a tackle for a loss. Like in some ways, he's almost like a nose tackle where he occupies, even when he's not making a play, he's occupying people and destroying things in the backfield. And if I were him, I'd be frustrated too. Especially because of the narrative about him and the things that people want to say based on his last year of college. It's like there's going to be a group of people out there that never notice that he makes plays 30 yards downfield as he's running from behind, like after everybody else has quit. They're never going to notice that he's blowing up double teams. And he's always going to be screwed in that respect unless he has like a 16-sack season. And then, like, he'll have been playing great for 4 years, and there will be people out there who will be like, finally, Clowney showed up. That would be frustrating if I were Jadeveon.
Yeah, and there's reasons for him to be frustrated. And all he can do is just control what he can control and keep playing ball, and those sacks will come. And that's the thing about it. They're starting to come this year. As long as the team can get out in the front, like this is a game that, you know, defensive linemen should get excited about. Like, we should be able to get ahead of this team and get real health and get those stats up, because a lot of times D linemen don't get a sack every game. They'll get, you know, no sacks, three sacks. You know, no sacks, two sacks.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the season, you got 14 sacks. And you're getting paid out the wazoo.
Well, Strahan in that record-breaking year did. I think most of his work was done versus like two teams in the division that he played four times, including he owned John Runyon, which is fun to watch because Runyon would give a kidney shot like a mofo.
Yeah, he did own John Runyon.
He really did. And those two used to go at it all the time.
Runyon was a good player.
He was a good player, and it didn't matter. But Strahan was going to get him at least twice a game.
Yeah,
he was going to get him and get a sack. And it was. I loved watching that matchup though. Growing up, that was a good matchup.
And now the Eagles just continue to dominate the Giants like they did last night. I think they're 17-5 in their last 22 games against the G-Men, which makes our friend Chris Jones very happy.